You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up Here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. We hope that your day is off to a great start. A little light rain falling in parts of the state right now, but ushering in some warmer temperatures over the next few days. So we are definitely looking forward to those. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We're glad you're here for the third hour of the show. Everybody on the network, we're glad you're still around. If you're listening on the app or social media, we are glad you are here. If you're somewhere else, tell the people in Madison. They got to jump on with you. Mm-hmm. But, all right, you know, we're at war with Iran now.
Is that what we're calling it officially?
Well, that's what I'm calling
okay.
it until
right.
I'm corrected.
All right. I'm just making sure I know my terminology.
But just by the government. They're saying war.
Okay.
I say, what's it good for? Absolutely nothing. I'll say it again. But anyway... Jamie, sometimes I have to be silly because if I'm not, I bang my head on the table.
Yes.
We've been talking since this happened. There has been a big call for where is Congress? What is Congress doing? Why doesn't the president have to get congressional approval to go to war? And we've talked to Howard Schwaber about this, and we've gone over this. And there's, again, loopholes and semantics that can be used. But yesterday, there was a war powers vote that came to the Senate, and surprise, surprise, the U.S. Senate rejected a resolution that would have required President Trump to seek congressional approval for further military action against Iran. The vote was 47-53, mostly along party lines, but John Fetterman from Pennsylvania, the alleged Democrat, he jumped in over there. Massey from the Republicans came to voted against or for it rather mm-hmm. for the limitation. Fetterman voted against the limitation, and it all goes back to the War Powers Act of 1973. But no surprise. I want to say no surprise,
right?
Because I'm really not surprised, but deep down in my gut, I am surprised and disappointed that it's one more example of Congress completely yeah. abdicating their responsibilities to the United States and to its citizens. And us, we are all of those
right.
things. And once again, they have just said, no, Donald Trump can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And Constitution be damned.
And in case you're wondering, anybody, when we said it was along party lines, yes, Tammy Baldwin voted in opposition or voted to enact the War Powers resolution. Ron Johnson voted to not enact the War Powers resolution, just in case you want to know how your local officials voted. Not again that there was a big surprise there.
Surprise.
But I did think that this was interesting because and this was not for me unexpected at all. The War Powers Act is full of gray area, and
yes.
presidents from both parties have pushed the limits of it for decades. So legally, this was going to be a very tough argument to win. Second, with this particular administration, they did technically notify some members of Congress
yes.
before the strikes, which is where that little bit of, I think, angst comes from the Democrats. And you mentioned Howard Schwaber joining us on Monday. As a constitutional attorney, he pointed that out. Mike Johnson knew,
yeah.
the Gang of Eight knew. Now, did they have a ton of notification? No, but technically, as part of the War Powers Act, which, by the way, was written by Democrats way back
yeah.
in 1973, they did uphold their end of the bargain, right?
This is the thing. Yes. And this is the thing. There are the gray areas you pointed out are widespread. They're, part of it is under attack. Part of it is our service people being in harm's way. There's a lot of wiggle room. But it came down mm-hmm. to the fact, and as much as, and Howard told us this, and it's sometimes it's hard to stomach, as much as we disagree, legally, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what some of the Republicans came out yesterday, and Lindsey Graham was one of them, and said, well, then the president could do whatever he wants for as long as he wants. That part is not true.
That is not true.
There is certain funding up to a certain point. Then Congress has to look at it again. So this, what
yeah.
they voted against yesterday does not give Donald Trump
right.
complete authority over this military action forever.
Right.
The Congress has to review it again.
It's not gifted. It's not gifted at all for in perpetuity. But I do agree with you, despite all of the talk that we saw on social media and on the cable news networks over the weekend from some of the Republicans, we knew that they were never going to break with the president on this particular this particular move, which is the disappointing part. Not unexpected, but always disappointing. Now, under this particular law, the president has to end military action within 60 days. This is where you're talking about some of the stipulations, yes. And we're saying it's not in perpetuity. He has to end military action within 60 days, and then if he doesn't, then Congress has to approve it at that point. He also has to notify Congress within 48 hours of deploying U.S. forces into hostilities. Now, this is going to also come into play, I think, over the next few days, because this administration has not ruled out sending in ground troops from the United States. Right. And that was what some of the lawmakers pointed at yesterday on the Republican side, saying that, if this is something you're going to do, then we're going to definitely have to look at this again. Now, what I would say
but
to that.
But it's too late.
It is too late.
And the horse is out of the barn. You already gave him the authority for 60 days.
Right.
So they can legally again.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. I would have to consult a constitutional attorney again. But I think once you've given him that okay, you can't qualify it.
Right.
It's done. They voted it down.
And let's be realistic. This administration has had a hard time throughout this entire war keeping the story straight, telling us what is actually going on, telling us why these attacks actually took place to begin with. So the fact that they now have this 60 days unfettered doesn't really, they're going to use it to their advantage. Let's be realistic. And if this administration comes back to Congress in another 60 days saying this is what we must do, this Congress isn't going to say no. They're not going to say no. It's going to be another, vote on party lines, and it's going to pass probably 47-53 or somewhere right in that range, and that's what's going to play out over and over again. And we're going to continue to see this for as long as this conflict continues. It's growing. The conflict is growing. It now includes 14 countries in the Middle East, and we are only 6 days into this.
Yeah. And it's, again, not only the countries that have been pulled into the war, but countries like China who need the oil that comes through the Strait of Hormuz.
Yes.
And all these other countries. This is potentially a worldwide issue based on where it is, the strategic location of all the oil. And that's not hyperbole. That's just look at it. Look at global economics. Look at the map. So, that falls. Now, the 60 days does fall within one of the timetables that was put forward by the White House. First, it was 4 to 5 weeks, could mm-hmm. be longer, maybe. We don't know. We're going to stay there till it's done. How do you know when it's done? When's it going to be done?
Yeah.
Because let's ask the question, who is going to take over? There's rumors about who the next regime leader will be, who the supreme leader could be. But as Donald Trump said himself, well, worst case is they put somebody in who's worse. Well, then do we stay and try to topple them too? Where does it end? We don't know. But if Congress is completely going to keep pushing things off now, we can only hope that in November, our fortunes change mm-hmm. and we get a more balanced attack in the Congress. Maybe then it would stop. But we have to look and go, okay, right now he does have the power to do what he wants.
Right.
And even after 60 days, this Congress, like you said, Jamie, is going to let him do it again. So it's legal. We have to stop that
yep.
question. We know where Congress is. They're letting him do what he wants.
Right.
So now we just got to ride it out, unfortunately.
I think one of the interesting votes yesterday came from Rand Paul, the only Republican who voted in favor of requiring.
Yes, I misspoke. It is Rand Paul.
Well, Tom Massey had said he was going to vote in opposition to the president, and then at the end of the day, did not. So this is why you know, there's some confusion
there. That's why I was confused.
Yes, of course. But he was the only Republican who voted in favor of requiring congressional approval, Rand Paul. And say what you will about Rand Paul. At this point, what I will say is we're living in some very strange times when I find myself agreeing with Rand Paul and even applauding something he did. But that's actually been the case for the last several months, because he's been one of the only principled Republicans to actually stand up. And he started raising the flag when the boat strikes in Venezuela happened, right? He was one of the first ones to come out and condemn those all over, not just on Fox News, but he was on Fox News a lot. But he actually made his way across several networks and basically said, this is murder. We can't do this as a country. So I applaud that.
I go back? Can I just clarify now?
Yes.
Because if the Supreme Court listener who was upset that we gave the Supreme Court credit, Jamie, you've already said, but it bears repeating, you don't agree with Rand Paul most of the time. But
99% of the time, yes.
In this case, he's doing the right thing.
He is.
So you got to throw him a flower for that.
Yes.
Not the whole bouquet, one flower.
And he actually spoke yesterday and said that Congress should have a say before the country gets pulled deeper into another war. And again, whether you agree with him on most things or not, he's using common sense principle in the Constitution to actually make valid points about why the Republicans should be more forceful in their opposition to the president and the administration's actions.
Now, he also knows what his job is,
right.
And he doesn't want to be overrun by the president. He knows what his job is as a representative.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what Congress is supposed to do. And it seems to chafe at him that this president is ignoring them. And it would chafe at me, too. It's like, hey, man. This is what we were elected for.
Well,
this is our job. Let us do it.
He is part of that libertarian branch of the conservative type government, right? He is more so the libertarian branch in a lot of the tried and true ways of libertarian, which is how Rand Paul came up in politics and behind his dad. He is going to believe in what the Constitution tells you, because that is where his ideals fall. And I can't fault the guy for that, because he's not wrong. I also believe in the Constitution as a Democrat. So I
you know? No, you don't. No, you don't.
Democrats want lawlessness.
No,
I don't believe in lawlessness. Technically, this vote yesterday was purely symbolic, right? We know this. But it also signals that Congress, at least for now, is willing to step back and let this administration run this conflict largely on their own. And there's still no clear timeline for how long this is going to last. There are still plenty of us asking a very basic question: what exactly was the reason that we started this war in the first place? And we're not getting the answers, and nobody has an answer. No.
And there's no consistent answer, at least.
No.
There's answers, but none of them make sense. None of them are consistent, and none of them are true.
Yeah. Now, to be clear, the administration has not confirmed any plans for boots on the ground yet. However, those are points that we are starting to hear the president bring up. Pete Hegseth has brought it up a couple of different times. And again, just as a reminder, 6 U.S. service members so far have been killed since this conflict started. And the House is expected to vote on a similar war powers resolution today, which could also force lawmakers to go on record about their stance on the conflict.
I want them on record.
I mean, that's the only, I think, bright spot we have, is that people like Fetterman, Rand Paul, the Democrats, the Republicans, we know exactly where they stand now. Yeah. It is 8:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
Auto Pens, pro or con? Well, we know where the Trump administration stands, and we'll talk about it more after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you for joining us this morning. If you're listening in Hayward on WBZH or in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap, we are glad that you're joining us this morning. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Thank you for being here. Oh, boy. You know, I didn't even, I mean, I knew there were auto pens. I knew, but I didn't care, quite frankly, if people used auto pens. I don't know who used auto pens in the past. It became a thing when Donald Trump was trying to paint Joe Biden as infirmed and out of touch, and he wasn't even able to sign his name and blah, blah, blah. We all know that the class act that Donald Trump is, he hung a picture of an auto pen where Joe Biden's picture should be. We know all of that. Well, just like the 2020 election, we have to keep rehashing everything and investigating and relitigating.
Yes.
And the Justice Department investigated whether former President Biden and his aides broke the law by using an auto pen to sign official presidential documents. The inquiry followed calls from who else? Fearless leader and his allies to investigate Biden's use of the device, particularly for pardons and commutations issued near the end of his presidency. The last person who should be questioning any pardons is sitting in the Oval Office right now. Well, he's probably in Florida, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yes. So let's go back again and blame everybody else. Look over here. Don't pay attention to the war. Look over here. Joe Biden might have used an auto pen.
What I love about
this,
what I love about this, though, is as much as the president loves to basically rail against Joe Biden for using the auto pen, this president also uses the auto pen.
Jamie,
so let's
how many times do I have to tell you stop with the facts?
So let's just be realistic, okay? But this probe was handled by the U.S.
Is that because his tiny hands can't hold a pen?
Perhaps.
Slam.
Perhaps.
I enrage.
It's fine.
I don't
it's
engage.
Fine.
I
so
enrage.
The probe
Pardon
was
me.
Handled by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C., led by none other than Jeanine Pirro, who yet has a case actually make it past the first stage. At any rate, we know that she's been a longtime President Trump ally. And investigators quickly ran into some major legal hurdles, as you can imagine. Because
that's surprising.
Completely. So prosecutors could not clearly identify what crime had actually been committed, which, as you know, even without a law degree, makes it really difficult to justify criminal charges that you're bringing. The investigation also faced constitutional issues because the Supreme Court's 2024 ruling granted presidents broad immunity for official actions taken while in office, including decisions like using or issuing pardons, I should say.
I thought that was only for Donald Trump. That's all presidents?
See, this is where it gets tricky. And again, to our texter earlier this morning, not giving the Supreme Court any sort of passes, but the laws that they've enacted that help Donald Trump are also laws that will now be on the books for all presidents when hopefully someday Donald Trump is no longer president of the United States. So
it was a horrible move by the Supreme Court. Just to clarify for that listener, we railed against it. We continue to rail against it. That immunity decision was
no president
abominable.
Should have that immunity.
No
president
none.
Should be above the law like that. That doesn't matter what side of the aisle they're on. Now, Biden has strongly denied any wrongdoing with this auto pen case, saying he personally made the decisions on pardons and commutations, and that the auto pen was simply used by staff to replicate his signature on a large number of documents. Yes, because that's what the auto pen actually is. After months of review, prosecutors determined there was not enough evidence to move forward, and the case was quietly shelved without any charges. And the potential case was never even presented to a grand jury. Do you know why? Because this was a waste of time, resources, and taxpayer dollars, because there was no criminal charge that could potentially be brought against
Biden.
When
has that stopped this administration from launching an investigation? I don't know if you remember, I don't know, like an hour ago when we brought up the fact that they were still relitigating the 2020 election, despite 60 some courts deciding and ruling against them that there was no interference and no irregularities. So this is going to come back because God forbid you just have to take responsibility for the decisions your own administration makes. Because all the facts they spew about what they inherited are wrong. They don't take responsibility. That was one of the big beefs that everybody was going after Kristi Noem about. Nobody takes responsibility. This president blames past presidents. I'm surprised he hasn't found some way to blame Grover Cleveland, because he keeps going back to Obama.
Yeah.
He's talked about Reagan. He's talked about everybody.
This is pettiness. What we're seeing from this administration yes. right now is pure pettiness. It's not surprising because we saw it during the first presidency. We're seeing it during the second presidency. But critics, this is what scares me. Critics inside the department say that some prosecutors are feeling pressure to open investigations into Trump's political opponents, even though some of these cases have already been dropped or rejected already because of a lack of evidence. And the Justice Department at this point has not ruled out revisiting this investigation in the future.
Of course not. I would remind all of these U.S. attorneys that someday, not only the administration, but Pam Bondi, they will all be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they are removed, whether they lose an election, whether it's term limit, whatever it is, for whatever branch you're talking about, those people will be gone. Hopefully, fingers crossed, the laws in the Constitution will remain. So don't bank on short-term compliance protecting you.
Yeah.
Because one day, everybody who complied short-term is going to have to answer for those actions and decisions. And you don't want to be on the wrong side of history.
Remember when the Supreme Court was the whatever they said was the law of the land, and we just agreed and we just moved on, and
we didn't have to agree. I mean, we would protest, we would scream and
sure.
yell, but that was it. And it wasn't, you know, even some of those decisions had political ramifications.
Of course, it always does. It's politics,
yeah,
but not like the degree that it does now. 8:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
Gabe Rotman joins us to talk about free speech and the press and slap laws. What? Yeah, we'll talk about it and clear it up on the Civic Media Network.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us here on the Civic Media Network. It is 8:35 right now. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. In February, the Wisconsin Assembly passed a bill to protect against lawsuits that were intended to discourage news coverage and quiet free speech. They also had measures in there requiring schools to adopt policies on appropriate communications between staff and students and establishing a definition of anti-Semitism. The bill was designed to protect people from slaps. Now, if you're not familiar with that term or those kind of lawsuits, don't worry. Gabe Rotman is here. He's the vice president for policy for the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. They are the leading pro bono legal service organization for journalists and newsrooms in the United States. And he is here to explain what slaps are, how they affect us here in Wisconsin, and how they affect the media landscape and free speech. Gabe, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. As a couple of people who make their living in media and dabble in free speech, is very interesting, as it should be for everybody. But let's start at the beginning. What are slap laws? And on the flip side, anti-slap legislation, which is what we've got proposed here in Wisconsin.
So, yeah, and thanks for having me. So a slap law, you know, it's a catchy acronym, but it's not very descriptive. It stands for strategic lawsuit against public participation. And you know, it was a type of lawsuit that was identified by some academics and advocates, a couple decades ago. Basic idea is, lawsuits are expensive. If you get sued, right, there's a lot that's going to have to happen. I mean, if it's your first time getting sued, it's a traumatic experience. And it also, you know, it's expensive. You need to go through a process that the lawyers call discovery, where you need to produce documents, you need to answer questions, you need to sit for depositions. So all of that is very disruptive. And the idea with a slap suit is that it is a lawsuit that's brought by a deep-pocketed interest they don't really hope to win. They're not bringing the suit because they think that they've got a good case. They're bringing the suit because they want to put you to the expense and trauma of having to defend the lawsuit in the hope that you'll shut up. And that's the basic idea, right? Is that it's a slap. It is a lawsuit that's brought to try and intimidate somebody, press or no, into not speaking out about an issue of public concern. And then anti-slap laws, which are, the Wisconsin Assembly passed this particular statute, versions of the law that the Assembly passed have been passing in states around the country. And they basically give you an exit valve quick in the case. So the lawsuit's brought, somebody sues you because you're exercising your free speech or free press rights. You can go to court and say, listen, court, this case is not meritorious. Please dismiss it quickly. Limit the expense. Let me keep talking.
Gabe, over at the website, rcfp.org, which is where you can find more from Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, you guys have a great section about the anti-slap laws. You actually have a really great graphic that explains some of the different cases regarding anti-slap around the country. So I would advise anybody to go take a look at that if you want to explore this a little bit more. But when it comes to Wisconsin's assembly bill, the anti-slap bill, what problems specifically to Wisconsin are you seeing that lawmakers are trying to solve with this type of legislation?
Yeah, so there is a case that's highlighted on the website from 2020 where you had a relatively small station in Wisconsin that was sued by the Trump campaign, I believe, for airing an ad, back during COVID. The reason why a station like that could become a target for a lawsuit is precisely because Wisconsin doesn't have a law on the books that would give you the opportunity to again go to court and say, listen, judge, this case doesn't have legs, please kick it early. Ultimately what can happen is if you don't have uniform protections around the country. And again, fortunately, the trajectory has been that states are very amenable to passing not just anti-slap laws, but a pretty strong version of anti-slap laws that has been, it's a model law. So lots of lawyers got in a room and hashed out what the best version of this would look like. And, that's what's at play in Wisconsin. But ultimately what happens and what this case shows from 2020 is that if you don't have a law in the books, that litigants who are looking to file slap suits will identify states that don't have strong protections and then bring cases there.
That case that we're talking about was at WJFW in Rhinelander. They're an NBC affiliate. Now, what the ad they were sued over was also published in ProPublica. Is it the strategy when they weaponize these lawsuits, not only to come to states that don't have anti-slap, but to go after smaller outlets? This media group has like six stations, not a lot of money. Is it to put them out of business? Is it to just force them to give in and pay up? What is the end goal? Because you're not going after ProPublica. They're big. They've got lawyers. They can handle things, but you're going after a small station. So what's the end game?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there's a couple of things going on. First of all, news organizations and reporters are pretty intrepid. They're not easily intimidated, but it's introducing into the calculus, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? Mm-hmm. And so what you're talking about is, even if you want to do your job, you're still second guessing, and that self-censorship is part of the problem that these anti-slap laws are trying to address. And so I think that's exactly right. I mean, one, you can go after smaller news organizations or, smaller private speakers who may not have the resources to defend, a defamation suit or another type of, this usually occurs in the context of defamation, mm-hmm. But it can be other types of lawsuits. But ultimately, these things are expensive, right? And they're a huge time suck. And, when you're thinking about whether you're going to need to put in the effort and the expense to defend yourself, maybe you won't speak in the first place. And that's why slap suits are so dangerous, because they have this speech suppressive effect, beyond just the lawsuit, the individual lawsuit itself.
We're talking with Gabe Rotman. He's the Vice President of Policy at Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, rcfp.org, if you want to find out more about what they do. Now, we've been talking a lot about the media, and a lot of people, when it comes to SLAPP laws, are going to hear the press freedom and assume that this only affects journalists. But how could an anti-SLAPP law protect even ordinary citizens who speak out at city council meetings, maybe protest, or even post criticism online, Gabe?
Well, so that's exactly so. And in fact, when people were starting to think about and identify this category of cases, SLAPP cases, it wasn't traditional news organizations or journalists who were often the target. It was, the prototypical case was a blogger who was complaining about land development plans. And then the land developer would sue the blogger for defamation or a similar claim, in an attempt to just shut the person down. So it certainly is a crucial protection for the press, but it's not limited to the press. And it's really about ensuring that all speakers don't have that second guessing when they're speaking on matters of public concern.
Gabe, there's been a lot of debate lately from people who, the media's own, they're fake news. It doesn't matter what the media says. And we've seen, on another point, we've seen all these large media companies just settle these lawsuits, even lawsuits that they have said they could have won. There was no basis, but they paid them off anyway. Why should people be concerned about this? The fact that we're paying off, we see what's happening at CBS, we see what's happening with, like you said, individual citizens, but people don't seem to grasp the magnitude of this kind of thing. How is this affecting not only media, but in big media companies, but small media companies, and why should we be so worried?
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's a couple of things going on there with those settlements, right? And they bring in kind of other areas of press freedom law. Part of the concern there, and I'm not suggesting this is the case with any individual incident or lawsuit, but there have been mistakes made in how policy has been set, especially when you're talking about something like the Federal Communications Commission. Mm-hmm. The Federal Communications Commission has the ability to regulate. So first of all, when we're talking about broadcast radio and television, so broadcast radio and television, unlike cable or unlike wholly digital outlets, they're licensed by the FCC. That gives the FCC an enormous amount of power over those licensees. And so when we're talking about the power of the government to try and influence news coverage, right? The existence of that regulatory authority is what gives you leverage over broadcasters, and that's really what we should be flagging, right? Especially given the efforts of the current FCC chair to revive lots of policies and rules at the FCC that can be used to try and influence coverage one way or the other. So ultimately, the short answer to your question is when we're talking about those cases, the CBS settlement and the like, we also need to be looking at the authority that we've given the federal government to try and squeeze news organizations across the board, which, as you note, will ultimately land more heavily on smaller and less well-resourced news organizations.
Take a look back in Wisconsin with this particular bill that's been proposed by the Assembly. If this makes it through the Senate, it's approved, the bill lands on Governor Evers' desk, he signs it. What kind of real-world changes would our listeners, who might be listening to what you're saying today, trying to take all of this in, what real world changes would they maybe notice on how the courts are handling some of these lawsuits that are tied to that public criticism or even just reporting in general in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, so first of all, the hope is that the lawsuits won't be brought in the first place, right? So these harassing, unmeritorious lawsuits won't be brought in the first place. That is the hope, and that's usually the effect. A lawsuit like the WFJW, lawsuit, because it's a different, there's the pain that is imposed by bringing the case is lessened. Now, putting on the lawyer hat, right, what will ultimately happen is if a lawsuit is brought against you for the exercise of your free speech rights or free press rights, basically you're commenting on an issue of public concern. Let's say you're criticizing a public official and they don't like that and they bring a case. Effectively, you can go to court, you can file what's called a special motion to dismiss, which happens very early in the case, and you say, look, again, judge, this case doesn't have legs. They haven't established, they haven't provided you enough to maintain the lawsuit. And then you kick the case very early before it gets that to that discovery process that I mentioned, where you've got to spend money on lawyers, sit for depositions, search through your documents, produce all of the, so all of that is avoided. So the case has become, even if these frivolous cases are brought, they become much less expensive, and that also diminishes the incentive to bring them in the first place.
Well, Gabe, thanks very much. Gabe Rotman has been our guest. He's Vice President of Policy for the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. You could go to rcfp.org to see all the work that they do there. Thank you for that work, Gabe, and we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's 8:48 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Do you have a specialty license plate? We're going to lighten it up for the last couple minutes on the big show on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. That will forever be my favorite rejoin to the show, yeah. Forever and evermore. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. I don't know which one I am. Probably neither. But that's all right. Wisconsin has a lot of specialty license plates.
We do.
Is there one that you wish they would offer? Because we're going to talk about the popular ones, but maybe there's a group that you wish you could support on your car, and Wisconsin doesn't have it. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Full disclosure at the beginning of this, I don't understand people who need vanity plates or specialty plates. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, nobody hugs you. But that's just me. That doesn't. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm saying for me, I see zero reason for them.
Yeah.
That being said, the State Department of Transportation has drawn up their top 10 list of specialty license plates based on how many were registered to Wisconsinites in 2025. And nothing smacks of morning radio like a list. Let's do a list. Who's your favorite blank?
We do love
but,
a good list.
You know, it's the end of the show, and we're tired.
It's
of,
been a lot of politics
heavy,
today.
Heavy.
It
a lot
has.
Of politics. Do you, now, having said that, I hope I didn't offend anyone here on the show. Do you have a specialty or vanity plate, Jamie?
No, I also am of the opinion that I am not a fan personally.
Personally, yes.
I do not like vanity plates that when I'm driving down the road, it's like playing mind games to figure out what exactly that license plate is trying to tell me. I don't feel like it should be that hard to have a license plate on your car. Yeah. Now, each their own. I fully sure. support your decision to do so. I just feel like it's very complicated.
Can we be honest? If you're driving an 86 Civic and you've got Batman on your vanity plate, I know you're not Batman.
Right.
Listen, first of all, your mobile is not up to snuff. And secondly, the rust spots betray your wealth, Bruce Wayne.
Right. But it would be something like BTMN. And then I'm
yes.
like, wait,
oh, sure.
is that the initials? Is that what is the, then I would have to figure it out. See, this is where it gets complicated for me. It's just
well, everybody's
too much.
Trying to be sly to
yeah.
get them past the thing. But I guess if you believe or a big supporter of certain organizations,
sure.
maybe that's why you would get
Love
one of
that.
These specialty plates. And this surprised me. The Road America, I haven't seen too many people with this one. The black and white mm-hmm. Road America design, it is now the second most common specialty plate. It went up from fifth place in 2024,
oh.
now to second. It's the most popular design available to anyone because the number one, which we'll get to, is only available to certain people who have a certain car past, or certain cars past a certain age.
Okay. All right. So we're very selective in our specialty plates here in the state of Wisconsin.
Of course we are.
And I love that we love the simplicity here. Don't give me anything fancy on my license plate. I just want black and white, and I want it easy to read, and that's what I want on my car. Don't give me
nothing
fancy.
That's because that's my worldview. It's black and white. It's right or wrong. It's us and them.
Yeah.
It's, I'm going to stop before I get myself in trouble.
Okay.
Boy, look at that restraint on a Thursday. Usually I
Good
don't
job, say, Brian.
I save my restraint for a day that we're not on the air. But
we have the secret show now for that.
That's right. The DOT shared this list on Facebook. It, as you can imagine, got a lot of comments and discussion. Somebody from Illinois who now lives in Wisconsin, maybe they say sarcastically in this story, I'm going to say no, they wanted a Bears or Cubs specialty plate. I would say no to the Cubs.
No, just no.
How would you feel, Parker, if there was a Wisconsin-Chicago Bears plate?
Oh, God, that's worse than having an Indiana plate that says Chicago Bears.
Oh, look at that. Throwing down the sports gauntlet this morning. Love it.
So here's the list. The number one is the collector plate.
Yeah.
That's for if you have an antique car, vintage car, you can get that. But then it's Road America. Then it's a collector motorcycle. Then hobbyist vehicle. So these are all really vehicle-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets into bigger groups for the specialty plate. The military group plate, so maybe you're a veteran and you want an Army plate or different service, branch of the service, that's fine. Over 25,000 of those are on the roads here in Wisconsin. Then Parker, the Packers specialty plates. Oh, who doesn't want one of
those? But do
you
know the little backstory about the Packers specialty plates?
No, please share.
If you get a Packers specialty plate every year, you are then charged $25, which then goes back to Lambeau to help maintain the field. So that's why people get, so it's kind of a cool thing.
Well, see that, right, and that makes sense. I think a specialty plate for me is different than the vanity plate.
A
specialty plate is, I support this, because the Brewers have one, the Ball
good.
And Glove logo one, they've got about 7,000. Endangered Resources, that's good, because it does go back.
Mm-hmm.
UW-Madison, they have a plate, 9,300 of those out. But yeah, you're right, they come with a $25 annual donation to the cause depicted on the plate. So that to me is like, okay, and I've seen ones for autism awareness. I've seen a lot of different specialty plates, and that's great. Okay. But don't, please, for the love of God, don't combine a specialty plate and a vanity plate. Then you are just like.
That just explodes my brain. I have to tell you, because I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. And I see that a lot. You see that a lot in Wisconsin with the Packers plates, where they like to, you know, basically proclaim their fandom with their Packers plate, specialty plate, and then some sort of vanity plate. So you've already got the Packers plate. We get you're a fan. Like,
no,
you don't need to tell me, too.
Yeah, you're not Younts 69. I get it. The Robin Younts not driving around with a Brewers of specialty and vanity plate on his car.
We
don't need any of that.
We got a call from Troy living, who was calling in from Mount Horeb. I had to drop off the line, but he wanted us to know that he does have a vanity plate that says Love Dems. So there you go. I like it. I can
listen.
If I don't have
not
to do
for me, it's not for me, Troy. But you do you. I'm not going to yuck your yum. If you want to have a vanity plate that proclaims that you love Dems, I do too. But I keep it close to the vest.
As long as it's easy to read, I'm cool. Just don't make me try to figure it out at a stoplight, okay? I don't have that kind of time. It's 8:59 right now. Thank you so much for joining us today on Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. It's Friday. Let's see what the news holds for us until then. Have a great day. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.